We made this.
Creatures that have been destroying the ships.
You told me it was enemy agents. Why didn't you tell me the truth?
If I had, would you have believed me?
There's only one thing for it. We'll have to go through the minefield.
Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doctor Who podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Baz Greenland, and I'm joined, as usual, in my adventure through time and space by my son, Ben, the biggest Doctor Who fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you today, Ben?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. Not a bad day so far.
Excellent. So, in this episode, we are going all the way back to 1972 and our first Third Doctor story with the Sea Devils. So, Ben, first question then. How does old John Pertwee rank among your favourite Doctors?
Okay, he is near the bottom, but recently I'm liking him more and more, and his era especially. Just him as the Doctor, I can't put above some of the others, like McCoy or Eccleston or Tennant, for example.
Yeah, I think John Pertwee is a Doctor that you acquire of age. He's like, and I was, you're too young for this, but you acquire him like a fine wine. I think he's really good, and I think the older you get, and the more you appreciate Doctor Who, I think the more you appreciate John Pertwee's Doctor.
And yes, that's what's happening with me. Him and his era, like the more serious stories. Like for example, I rewatched Doctor Who and the Silurians a month or two ago, and I enjoyed it a whole lot more. Not great, but I still enjoyed it a lot more because the older I am, the more I appreciate the nuances of what his Doctor and the scripts are going for.
Absolutely. Well, it's good. I've been banging about season seven of Doctor Who being absolutely amazing. It's my favourite John Pertwee season. And you've been going, what? It's boring. But I think you're slowly coming around, aren't you?
What? So you may remember how I said Ambassadors of Death was my least favourite Pertwee. The other week or so, I finally rewatched it for the first time in God knows how many years. Still my least favourite. Not great. But I don't have a hatred for it anymore. There are some good moments. It's just a bit... Okay, fine, whatever.
It's been a little bit slow for you, isn't it? But yeah.
I mean, yeah. But I'm glad I appreciate it a little bit more, but not a whole lot more. But there
Excellent.
We are.
So when we get to the TARDIS crew in the year 2032, you'll be saying, oh, Ambassador of Death, it's a classic, the all-time great John Pertwee episode.
Yeah, don't hold your breath out for that. Look, I haven't come round to some of the older classic stories either, so, you know.
Yes, opinions change. We'll see how we get on, if we're still doing the Doctor Who podcast in 2032.
Yeah, I need to rewatch the Aztecs. That should get a re-evaluation.
Yeah, but that is on the horizon. We'll get there eventually. Of course, I think we're talking about a much more lively, fun, action-packed story, this one. We're going back to the Sea Devils because they're finally making their way Doctor Who for the first time since 1974's Warriors of the Deep. And we all remember what happened with the Murka last time.
I demand the Murka in Legend of the Sea Devils. Either, though, you update it to look really great, or you keep it the exact same. Seriously, Merc is attacking pirate ships. Come on.
I think Merc attacking pirate ships is fantastic.
Actually, I think that's the image in The Lost Dimension where it's attacking a pirate ship, the Ninth Doctor, Rose, Jenny and Varsha are on. So there we are.
Oh, there you go then.
Does look quite sea dragon-y rather than...
Yeah.
Well.
I think if the Merc came out exactly like it did in the 80s, I think there may be some opinions on the internet about that one.
And I'd be all for it. I love the Merc. The Merc is great.
Yeah, in theory, the Merc is great, absolutely. So
apparently the novelisation of Warriors of the Deep describes it as like this big ancient sea dragon, and then on screen you get, well,
yeah,
the Merc.
Yeah. Yes, you got what you got. So, of course, this episode is going out very close to the broadcast date of Legends of the Sea Devils, which we're also going to be reviewing. And you've already kind of touched upon it, but are you excited for the Sea Devils' return?
Oh, hell yeah. Seriously. As you may remember from the Eve of the Daleks podcast, very, very happy. And even my dislike of pirate episodes has been waning more and more just because of the fact of the Sea Devils. The more I see about it, the more I really want this episode to come. Although, do want a trailer soon. By the time this goes out, it'll probably be out.
Well, I'm hoping so, because this is going to go out about a week before the episode broadcast. So, yeah, hopefully by then we'll know a bit more. But... I think we're generally quite excited for this one. I think this is probably the most excited I've been for a Doctor Who story probably in a couple of years now. I've got some issues with the Chimera, and we've talked about it many, many times. Let's not go into that now, but this has me excited. This is the first time in a long time I've been generally really, really looking forward to the next Doctor Who story.
And it's probably the first big monster return since... arguably the Zygons and the Ice Warriors in Season 7?
Yeah, possibly, yeah.
We'll probably get more into talking about that in the actual podcast.
Absolutely, I'm sure you will. So, let's go all the way back to the Sea Devils' debut.
Which, as of this year, is 50 years old.
It is, which is a great, great opportunity for their return.
Yeah. Happy 50th, Sea Devils.
Hey. The Sea Devils was the third story of Season 9 and featured the return of the Master, played by Roger Delgado, after his last appearance in The Daemons. This six-part adventure was written by Malcolm Hulk, who of course also penned Doctor Who and the Silurians from Season 7, to which the Sea Devils are related, of course. And it was directed by Michael E. Brant and aired between the 26th of February and the 1st of April 1972.
Oh god, now I think about it, the Sea Devil Massacre in Episode 6, every time they get shot, the Navy could just be yelling, April Fools!
Quite possibly.
These reptiles need more justice.
They do, there's a lot of them. We'll get onto the massacre at the end of this episode, certainly. But what would you give the Sea Devils out of 10?
Oh, definitely a solid 8, which, I've mentioned it before, is kind of my average ranking to give a story I really like. But I think this one does deserve it.
Yeah.
Not, like, the best of all time, and not the best Pertwee story, although it is close, but it is very, very good.
Yeah, it's great. I think it's a good, solid 8, sometimes hitting 9s at moments. The music is a 1 out of 10.
I'd never picked up on the music before we watched this again.
We'll talk more about the... Well, I'm not sure you can even call it music, but we'll come back to that.
And if you think Seeker Nakinola doesn't have anything, it's just ambience. It's complete opposite here.
Oh, God. What would he do with the kind of remastered version of the Sea Devil soundtrack?
That's kind of what I want to see now. Come on, have this music in Legend of the Sea Devils. Annoy the ears of all the British public.
Yes. And with those kind of intense zooms as well on the Sea Devil faces.
Yep.
Yeah, gotta be.
Trial of a Time Lord face zoom, Sea Devil edition.
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of face zooms in this story as well. So, I think it's 8. Sometimes it's bordering on 9, but in the moments, there's some really great, iconic Third Doctor moments in this story. But the music is the worst music of any Doctor Who story I've ever watched. So there are highs and there are certainly lows as well.
I still need to show you Doctor in Distress. Just see what Doctor Who music can really be like.
Yeah, quite possibly. I'll be in distress, absolutely. Yeah.
Recently learned Hans Zimmer did the music on that, which I do not know what to say to that. That is impressive, but also cruel irony, because some of you listening probably have heard the song and know what I'm on about. So yeah.
So what is Doctor in Distress?
when the series was put on hiatus in 1985 for 18 months, a group of fans got together and made a charity single called Doctor in Distress, and they got Colin Baker, Nicola Bryan, Nicholas Courtney, and one other person, I forget, to record bits of it, and it was hated, and radios refused to play it because of its poor quality, but I unironically listened to it a lot. It is very fun.
And it was by the great Hans Zimmer.
The music was, yeah.
Wow. Like, I know. Got to start somewhere. So before we get into the detail then, where does the Sea Devils rank amongst other Third Doctor stories?
Just doing TV, because I always have the curse of trying to include other mediums, in top three. Possibly number two, possibly number three. I think it interchanges sometimes.
I think it's one of the most enjoyable Third Doctor stories.
It's one of the most Third Doctor stories.
Quite possibly. I think if you were going to show someone a Third Doctor story for the first time, this could be a contender. You know, with the caveat of ignore the music, but enjoy what's on screen. I think there's so much. Because it's got the Master, it's some great Master Doctor moments. Some great action, great stuff with the Navy. The Sea Devils look great as well. Some really big monster moments and action moments and mystery. There's a lot in this story.
Mm. I do love how the Navy actually helped out with the story. Like, they lent ships and a few crew members, I think, to help out with production.
It definitely really helps add the sense of scale in this story. You know, the fact you've got real life footage of naval fleets and you've got naval warships in the story, that I mean, that really makes it for me as well.
Mm. Especially as in Doctor Who magazine recently, there was an article on during production of the Sea Devils and airing, some people from some government officials came in because they were really worried that one of the submarine props built for the story was coincidentally really close to an actual submarine they were building for the Cold War, so they had to make sure secrets weren't getting leaked out and they didn't have to pull the story or stop Doctor Who production and stuff, and there we are.
So there was actual risk that the Sea Devils may have been one of those kind of lost stories that we never saw because of the footage of the real life submarine.
Yeah. Well, at least half of it. Hell, there might have been even Doctor Who pulled for good. Would have done a Sharda, maybe. Half of it's out there, half of it needed to be done. Imagine this story animated in parts.
Some good Sea Devils out there. Maybe even throw in a Merkel or two as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, the Sea Devils, their main bulk of it's in the latter half. They'd probably get animated quite a bit.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go into each episode in a bit more detail then. So what do you think of the opening episode of The Sea Devils?
It is definitely, as far as setup goes, it is really enjoyable and has some classic Doctor-Master interactions.
Mm. Yeah, I really like that. Obviously, the Master's in prison at this point. He's been captured after the events of the Daemons, and Doctor and Joe go to visit him in this kind of castle fortress. I love the fact the Doctor's glee at the Master's put on weight. I think that's such a kind of bitchy kind of friend type thing to do.
Frenemy,
yeah, definitely. I think that's great. And there are some bizarre concepts, like the idea that the guards are hypno-proof. You know, we're all immune to hypnotism, which of course actually is all a lie anyway, because you find out that Trenchard very quickly, who is running the prison facility, is in league with the Master. But yeah, the idea of this trying to convince the Doctor that all the guards are hypnoproof is a bit of a stretch.
Mm, I can understand unit officers being hypnoproof because they are trained to resist, and by the time we get to Frontier and Space, Joe can quite easily resist it, but that's after being hypnotised before. But just your casual prison guards? Yeah, no. Especially not against Delgado. Delgado and Jacoby are like the master hypnotists.
Yeah. I mean, Delgado is so good and so much fun in this. I love that he watches the Clangers. Yeah. It's great. But of course, that's what the music reminds me of. The music in the Sea Devils reminds me of the music from the Clangers, so maybe there's something there.
I do wonder if Russell T Davies remembered that and used it as a reference when in The Sound of Drums you have the John Sinmaster watching Teletubbies in 10 Downing Street.
Oh, I'm sure it's an exact, definitely homage to the Sea Devils.
The Master, he loves children's TV, which is apt considering he's in Doctor Who.
Yeah. But I think there's a really, really, you said it's a really good setup there. There's some really good characters. I mean, Trenchard is just horrible and smug and arrogant. And the fact that he's working with the Master is not really a surprise. But I think it's a nice little twist even within that as well. And there's a really good mystery as well going on these mission ships. I think the build-up to the Sea Devils is fantastic because you've got the idea of this. You've got a naval base, you've got the prison setting, and then you've got the mystery of these ships going like basically vanishing in the water, which kind of has a real sense of menace and urgency that kind of feeds through the story.
Yeah, I'd definitely say the first half is more focused on the Master and then the latter half's more on the Sea Devils. Although episode 4 is, I think, quite evenly split between the two of them.
Yeah, I think that's it. For a Sea Devils episode, you get a lot of really good Master stuff in the story.
Yeah. And where do you go wrong with the Master? You just can't.
No, not particularly Delgado's Master. He's so entertaining. I'm glad they didn't have him in every story like season 8.
Yeah, although, bear in mind, chronologically, there were two stories between this and Daemons, but obviously a season break as well.
Yeah.
And then he's back in two stories' time after this as well, in the Time Monster.
Yeah. I mean, he was a little bit overused in season 8, but I think his appearance here was great, and it makes me a real treat to watch. So the other thing about the first episode as well is we don't have UNIT in this story, though obviously they are mentioned, and the Doctor and Joe are visiting from UNIT, but you've got Captain Hart and the Navy, and they very much fill that kind of UNIT role in the Sea Devils.
When we started episode 1, it only then clicked properly to go, wait, no, UNIT aren't in this story. Like, I knew that, but it never registered with me as a fact.
Yeah.
Until I saw this and I was like, wait a minute. I also quite like how there's the continuity of the Master in the prison, and it's not just, oh, he's escaped and he's suddenly in league with this. The Doctor actually goes to visit him, and that's the catalyst
for
the Doctor getting involved.
Yeah, I think as well, the reason that you forget that UNIT aren't around, because actually there's a very big military presence in the story with the Navy as well. So there's a lot of action, a lot of gunfights, a lot of kind of battles going on, and a lot of negotiating with government officials and the kind of the military ranks and so on. Also, if you see in the traditional UNIT settings, you just get it flipped with the Navy instead, which I think is a nice change. And I think Captain Hart is really good, and I think Captain Hart is a good one-off replacement for the Brigadier.
And when you think about it, for the Doctor being an exile, you've actually got a solid 3-story run without the Brigadier in it. Because preceding this, you had the Curse of Peladon, which was obviously off to space, and same with the Mutants, which in total adds up to 16 episodes without the Brigadier, at least playing a main focus.
Well, I think with season 9, they were slowly starting to move away from the traditional setting they've had in seasons 7 and 8, and obviously season 10, he's off again in the TARDIS, so...
Yeah, because season 9, you get time travel, then alien world, then the Navy in a different part, then another alien world. And then, I just want to go to Atlantis, says Doctor Who. You know?
It's a bit bizarre.
Hey, I mean, the Underwater Menace also went to Atlantis, so...
Yes, the Underwater Menace is an interesting story.
Oh, God, imagine if Pertwee and Delgado had come across Professor Zavoff.
Oh, it doesn't bear thinking about. But I think Edwin Richfield, who plays Captain Knight, is a really good replacement for Courtney's Brigadier. I think I like that there's a similar role, that a slightly antagonistic, respectful, you know, mix of frustration and respect between them. And the Doctor there, he's the expert, and he does certainly lead, but also some outlandish ideas. And it does take heart, a kind of a moment to really kind of realise what's going on.
Certainly. But he does act as a great play for, especially Jo, considering she spends a decent part with him while the Doctor's off underwater or whatever.
Well, I really like all the Navy characters. You've got Edwin Richfield as Captain Hart. You've got Jay Murphy as Third Officer Jane Bly. I mean, particularly Jane Blythe, sorry. I think there's a lot of sexism that happens, particularly like Walker later on, and you see the way she reacts to that. But I think she's a good, strong character as well.
And then even then, with the sexism, you get the whole sandwich debacle.
Absolutely, yeah. I think Alec Wallace plays the guy on the radio as well. I think they're all good, solid characters. You can almost tell it feels very much like a believable dynamic working setup. In the same way that you have Benton and Yates and the Brig and so on.
Radio guy doesn't get much to do, though. So you know what that means. Coming soon from Big Finish Productions.
Quite possibly.
Radio Guy, Volume 1 of 4.
That's quite possibly going to happen. Yeah, I would not be surprised. But it's a good setup, and I think yeah they feel like a believable unit in the same way that the unit characters do. The last thing about Episode 1, then, obviously, is the deserted sea fort there. You've got those two guys working on the sea fort, and of course the Sea Devils turn up. And
a Sea Devil. Well,
AC Devil, yes. But I think, again, there's a really good kind of building presence around there as well. And, yeah, it doesn't really release. So, of course, the idea is there's a mystery there. The Doctor and Joe go there.
They're trapped.
And they're trapped. And they get the first reveal of the Sea Devil. And then a slightly odd cliffhanger, though, I think. The cliffhanger is a little bit... Because the Sea Devil appearance comes a few minutes before the end of the episode.
Well, yeah, and then... Again, episode 2 is a bit later. I feel episode 1 and 4 both have a bit odd cliffhangers. We'll get into episode 4 a bit later.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like the Sea Devil reveal should have been the cliffhanger. And yeah, that happens 2 minutes before. But still, I think going into episode 2, I think there's some really good stuff there on the sea fort there. And
the guy giving the Sea Devil the name on the fort is quite fun. It's like there's a trend of Doctor Who monsters being given their names by people who discover them. Like you have the scientist who calls them Silurians, which it's nice that they register that they should be called Eocenes in this story, because yeah. I don't think we got that in Silurians. Then you have this with Sea Devils, and you have that archaeologist guy who names the Ice Warriors and all sorts. Although apparently that's a racial slur to the Ice Warriors. Don't call them Ice Warriors, it upsets them.
No, apparently not.
And apparently in the future there's a derogatory term for them called greenies, so...
Okay.
Welcome to the Virgin New Adventures.
Right, okay. But yeah, I do like how this ties into the Silurians, and they're not just another random lizard race who lives on Earth. There's a tie to it, which, for all its failings, I like that Warriors of the Deep in the 80s, which was the other Sea Devil story, had the Silurians and Sea Devils working together, because they are both kind of... They're offshoots of the same race, with the lizard races, and I think... That's why I'm really surprised, given that there's been several Silurian appearances in modern Doctor Who now, there's been no mention of the Sea Devils yet.
Although, when you think of it, most of the Silurian appearances in modern Who properly are Vastra, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, when you get away from the Sea Fort, I think one of the real highlights of the Sea Devils is the Doctor returning to the prison base, and obviously you've got Trenchard acting suspiciously... And then you've got the master in the captain's uniform, and then the realisation that actually all the guards need to be replaced, and the master turning on the Doctor in that brilliant, brilliant sword fight.
Oh, that's like possibly the most Pertwee moment ever Pertwee, along with Planet of the Spiders episode 2.
Yes, absolutely. You've got Kido, and you've got fencing. It's great in one.
I know, it's like... And the Doctor and the Master's rivalry, but you can also see they're both playful, having fun doing it. Like, the Doctor just, like, gives the Master a sword back, has a bit of a sandwich, you know.
Oh, yeah, the sandwich bit is so funny, but it works so well.
It could come off, like, if it wasn't these two serious characters, it could probably come off as a bit like, well, that's just comedy for the sake of it, but the dynamic between Pertwee and Delgado... just make the whole fight scene just iconic.
Oh, completely. And I think it's true in the sense that across the story, and particularly in the sword fight sequence, that both John Pertwee and Roger Delgado and the Master and the Doctor are all having fun. The Master and the Doctor are really enjoying the kind of the banter and the conflict and the sword fighting. And there's a lot of this running throughout the Sea Devils. They seem to actually, when they have to... They seem to kind of enjoy working together. They're quite respectful of each other, but they're all kind of out to destroy each other at the same time. It's a real kind of great demonstration of the frenemy relationship of the Master and Doctor.
Like, obviously how it ends up, like, Capaldi and Missy. 12 and Missy, like, ending up trying to be friends again and working together. You can still see that, like, friendship spark that's been there since the start.
Absolutely. I think that's what the 12th Doctor and Missy relationship does so well. It goes back to this relationship you get between the First Master and the Third Doctor.
It's probably the closest to that you emulate with one, because like Tennant and Sim didn't really get that. Ainley was just cross loads of different doctors.
Yeah.
Roberts was just having the time of his life.
Yeah. Ainsley's master didn't really have his doctor because he was across so many of them.
I'd probably say his main one, just because he had the most appearances with him, would be Davison.
But... yeah, yeah, quite possibly. Though I think his best one is with McCoy, so there you go.
There we are.
But,
I mean, Colin Baker is just a scarecrow, and then he's in The Matrix, so...
yeah, yeah. But so, we any Road to the Master is always great to see. But I think, yeah, this is pure Master gold. And I love the relationship and dynamic between the Master and the Doctor. And I think the sword fight and the Doctor stopping to have the sandwich is just... wonderful.
Mm. Yeah. The music, though, throughout all of this.
Oh my god, the music.
We may as well talk about that now.
Yeah, the music is so odd. It's like someone's got their cat and made them walk across a keyboard and then just mash some keys together. It's like, it's just, there's nothing about it that makes sense. It doesn't add to any, it doesn't add to the atmosphere. It actually, for a story that has a lot of action, a lot of tension, a lot of drama going on, you've got them like running through minefields or seagulls attacking or sword fight. You've got ding-dong, and things happen all the time. And I hope you enjoy my impression of the Third Doctor seagull's music. But yeah. It's like, it's just that all the time. And you want to enjoy the drama and the tension of it, and you've got this weird clonky music that is so out of place. It's more, it would feel out of place on the Clangers, and that's kind of what it feels like it's more appropriate for.
It would probably either it would marry really well with it, or even not fit the web planet.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Just maybe just like randomly someone like tortured or somewhere and just have, can you imagine?
Imagine doing a really serious tortured story or one of the lesser serious ones, yeah. And suddenly instead of here he comes in a ruddy great tractor, you get
You haven't got the Children of Earth yet, but I'm just thinking Children of Earth now with the Sea Devil's music. It's like
I know Children of Earth's reputation.
Yes, you'll get there. So, but the music is so bad, and even in this sword fight is so fun, but also there's that underlying tension between them as well, and you've got this clinky, clonky music that is. It's irritating. It's irritating how bad it is.
Yeah, every time you zoom in on a Sea Devil as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Better have that in Legend of the Sea Devils.
I'm resisting the urge to make any more impressions because it's so bad, but I think you get the gist of it. So, of course, you get the cliffhanger to episode 2, which is the Doctor throwing the knife.
The Master.
Sorry, start again.
The Doctor doesn't throw knives.
Oh, there you go. I've completely lost it now. It's the music. The music has completely thrown me.
What do you think John Pertwee is, a criminal?
Oh, dear. I'm going to start again now. I've lost it. Yes, the cliffhanger.
Welcome to the TARDIS.
Don't start again. No. Right, okay. Okay, right. I'm taking a deep breath. A deep breath? This is what you're doing to me, Ben. What are you doing to me?
I aim to please.
End of part 2. The Master, played by Delgado, throws the knife at the Doctor's back. What did you think of the resolution of that in the beginning of part 3?
Like, I would have expected the Doctor to probably turn around and catch it. It's just pure luck that it doesn't just hit his neck. Although, I think, like, Trenchard bursting in, I think that kind of, like, threw the Master's aim off somewhat, which is how it hit the wall.
Yeah, it's sort of supposed to work the way it just looks like actually the Master had a really bad aim and hit the door instead.
He's a stormtrooper.
He is.
He's a Sontaran from Flux.
Quite possibly, yes. So, yeah, I think it doesn't really build on the cliffhanger, but what's interesting about part 3 is actually they do the entire sword fight again. Normally, Doctor Who will do the last 30 seconds of the previous episode.
Unless you're Power of Crow, in which case you put like the whole last minute because you have not enough content to fill the runtime. The episodes are like 21 minutes long and a minute of it's just a minute of the recap.
Okay, quite possibly. But I think in this case, yeah, it's great. The sword fight is so good between the Master and the Doctor. Episode 3 basically goes, you know what, we're going to show the whole thing again and go into that cliffhanger. So I think that's great. I think maybe that's why, maybe the cliffhanger resolution is so naff, actually. The best way to do it is just to do the whole thing again. So yeah. That works. the tables are turned, and then suddenly the Doctor is the prisoner and Trenchard's Lord is the master revealed.
It can't be a classic Doctor Who episode 3 without the Doctor arrested. I read in an interview with Stephen Moffat somewhere, he said, like, the classic show always used to have the Doctor locked up in part 3 because you're trying to stop him turning off the whole damn show. Mask of Mandragora is an example that always comes to mind with that.
Never really thought about that, but you're probably absolutely right, yeah.
I'm not like Moffat, sorry.
Well, of course, Moffat's great. Well,
yeah,
I absolutely believe in Moffat. So, the other thing this episode has is the debut of the submarine, and I love the fact that you get real footage of the naval submarine in this story.
I presume this is the submarine that caused the controversy with people.
Yeah. Captain Ridgway. Do you know who the actor is?
Not at the time, no, but I've just seen your notes and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's old Rassilon himself, Donald Sumpter.
Ah, yes, Rassilon.
Yes.
I did not realise he was in this story.
Yeah.
He said to me, like, who do you think that is? And I was trying to work it out, but no, he wouldn't tell me. He was going to save it for now.
There you go, yeah. Donald Sumpter, who plays Rassilon, who apparently was also in the World of Space, is Commander Ridgway, the commander of the submarine that comes under attack in this episode. So I think what I really like about this episode is that you've got the escalating tension. Yes, you've got the whole great stuff with the mask and the Doctor and the tables being turned, but you've got the attack as well, and the submarine. I think the submarine comes under attack really in episode 4, but I think it's kind of building to all that tension. You've got the real sense of scale in the story with the submarine, the naval base, and the prison. You know, the set pieces get bigger and bigger as the story progresses.
Well, it definitely lands the sense of scale as the Sea Devils wake up more and the Master's nearing the end of his plans to go and help the Sea Devils, leading to the end with that iconic cliffhanger. I always thought it was more than one at the end of part 3. I seem to get confused with part 5.
Yeah, I think that's it. Part 3 ends with the Doctor and Joe on the run. You've got essentially the guards to the left of them, the minefield to the right, and out of the sea comes the Sea Devil. I think it's a great moment.
Just wants to borrow the Wi-Fi code. Seriously, the reception in that ocean, it's shoddy.
Right, okay. Ben's off on one again.
Hey.
But, yeah, I think you're right. I think you remember being multiple Sea Devils, and that's really in part 5 when they attack. But I think it's a great, great eerie, very kind of offbeat look as it comes out there.
The Sea Devil design also, like, in the teaser for Legend of the Sea Devils, it looks quite faithful to the original one, although their necks are a lot less stumpy now. But in the Sea Devils, when they zoom in on them, they do kind of look like birds almost, like, no beaks, just snouts, but it's always like those disgusting looking birds that are like, do you have food? And it's a bit unsettling if you were to look at it.
Do you like the Sea Devil design?
Oh yeah, well, I love it. Not as great a fan of Warriors of the Deep, although that, even though they're in armour for a lot of it, because they just don't look right. Maybe if they took their helmets off, they'd have their frilly back bits.
I don't know, maybe I'm one of the few people, but I actually really like the samurai-style armour.
Oh yeah, it's nice, but it's not the best version of the design for me.
Yeah, but I think it looked great here. The necks look a little bit long. They look very kind of tall and very long necks in this.
I know, obviously, very lanky.
But I think it's because, obviously, it's rubber model heads on top of people's actual real heads, I think. So that's why they're doing it. But I think they look great, and I think they look like they've come out of the sea with the kind of the ragged white...
Wow. Netting?
Netting, yeah, the netting kind of clothing they've got as well there. I think they look great. Yes, they look a slightly rubby. When you get the zoom, you get a lot of intense zooms on Sea Devil faces in the story.
And also, like, the frilly bits in the back of their head look quite paper mache-y sometimes. A bit like the fish people from Underwater Menace, but a lot better.
Yes, let's not talk about the Underwater Menace, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'll stop talking about the Underwater Menace. I don't know why I keep going on about it.
One day we'll have to cover that story, won't we? But I think we're going to save that for maybe 10 years' time.
It'll be a sad day when we cover the Underwater Menace.
Anyway, yeah, I think they look a bit rubbery, the Sea Devils, but I think the design is great. And I think, as we record this, we've only had one trailer. I'm sure there'll be another trailer. Well, we assume there's going to be another trailer by the time this episode goes out.
Well, yeah, considering the air date's only been, like, it has been revealed, but sort of not officially at the same time. We're just over a month away from the supposed broadcast date now, so surely we get a trailer and a poster at some point.
Yeah, but obviously that trailer we got at the end of Eve of the Daleks and that Siege of the Design, it looked really good. It looked really faithful.
Oh, yeah. I really do like that design. It's... Chibnall's really good at bringing back old monsters and then being really faithful to the designs. Like, for example, the Sontarans, they look the closest they've done to classic Who. Like, they look close to Lynx and Stire, more like Strax.
Yeah, I really like the Sontaran design in Flux, actually.
Though we don't need a repeat of Invasion of Time. I'm not sure what was up with them. They practically looked orange. And sun too long, having a tan.
That's it. Tan the potatoes.
Crispy.
Yeah. Part four then. So part four is when you get the action, then you've got the...
The minefield,
yeah. So the Doctor and Joe racing across the minefield, the Sea Devil in pursuit being controlled by the Master's device, and then obviously the Doctor turns the mines against the Sea Devil, and you've got that horrible scream when it dies.
I know. Well, it doesn't die.
It gets injured, doesn't it?
Run away. Horrible histories.
Yeah.
I love that reference.
But I think it's a really good action-packed opening part. Opening sequence to part four that kind of builds on the cliffhanger.
And it's definitely the Sea Devil's first proper go at it in this story, because like you get it on the Sea Fort briefly, but it essentially just runs away. And you get it, like you get them going to the submarine, but again, you don't really see that. So this is the first time I think you get the real sense of the Sea Devil design, what they are, and how they're doing it. It's like, it runs a bit like a penguin.
Yeah.
Waddle waddle.
I think, generally, watching back the Sea Devils, I'm really pleased with the pacing of it. I think six-part stories tend to lag, but I think this one is really well-paced. You've got the strong open... Maybe because you've got the Master in it as well. You've got stuff from the Master to really kind of capture the audience's attention. You've got the build-up to the naval unit and Trenchard. You've got the Sea Devil finally arising in Part 3 and the real threat revealed. And then... Part four, I think, is really when all hell breaks loose and you really ramp up the tension.
And I think this is the only six-parter of the Pertwee era that has the Master in, where he's in every episode. Because, like, Colony in Space and Frontier in Space, he pops in about midway through.
Yeah.
Daemons is a close contender, five episodes, but...
Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is great.
No, I'm lying. I think Mind of Evil probably has him in every episode as well.
There you go. I will trust your knowledge of this.
Yeah, it's a really underrated story, actually. The Mind of Evil, it's great.
Cool. There you go. Ben recommends. So, part four, the escalation is great. You've got the attack on the submarine. So, we established the submarine, investigate what's going on in part three. That comes under attack in C4. So, you've got the tension there. And you've got the Master... manipulating Trenchard and some of the Sea Devils leading to that really great attack on the castle prison when they essentially massacre everyone and...
And Trenchard's just... Bye-bye, Trenchard.
Yeah. I mean, that's very satisfying. Trenchard is one of two characters, and we haven't seen the other character, Walker, yet, but Trenchard is one of those characters you just want to punch.
Although, to be fair, in his defence, Walker, you can't really defend... In Trenchard's defence, he was being hypnotised and manipulated by the Master.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, probably not all of it. He probably had some of his traits still there, but
yeah,
he wasn't fully himself this
time. There's a little bit of, yeah, victim of the Master in him. Walker's a completely different story.
Walker is just...
horrible. But the attack on that, I think Trenchard's death, though, is really satisfying. And I have to say, though, you know, finding fault on the Sea Devils... as well as the horrific, horrific, horrific music, the over-the-top reactions of the guards as they are killed one by one by the Sea Devils. It's like, you need to go back to acting school. In fact, no, don't go back. Just stop acting altogether.
Still not going to beat the War Games Episode 9, I'm sorry. There's like a guard who dies towards the end of War Games Episode 9, and instead of collapsing, he turns around, lowers himself to the floor, and just puts himself down gently.
That is an absolute terrible, terrible death scene. But this one, they are so laughable. It's the way they kind of, these the over dramatic faces, and it's like die in the most agonizing way possible.
At least when the Sea Devils died, they did front flips and stuff. They didn't have to look really over the top because they're reptiles.
But yeah, I can't say there's any acting going on with the guards' deaths in part four. No, it's so hammy.
Here's a rubber reptile monster. He's killed you. Scream.
Yeah, it's like the way they throw the arms up in the air and they die in agonising death. It's like, no, just stop it. But I think Trenchard's death is quite satisfying. The other big thing is obviously with Doctor and Joe and the naval unit as well. So there's some really great scenes here as well, particularly the sandwich sequence.
Mm. It's like, because the Third Doctor was sexist at times. And he's like, Joe, this is no time for sandwiches. Offers it to all the men. Oh, I'm so sorry, Joe. There seems to be none left.
I know. It's so
poor Joe.
All she wants is a sandwich.
I know. Plus, the Doctor already had a bite of a sandwich earlier.
Well, exactly, yeah. Joe asks for some sandwiches because they're hungry. They've been there for ages. They bring her some sandwiches and the Doctor gives them all away and eats them himself. Yeah, it's but they are the most tiniest sandwiches I've ever seen on screen, ever.
They are very small, yeah.
They were finger sandwiches and they were sandwiches in the Sea Devils.
It occurs to me, Joe does really badly with a food-related incidents in Season 9. Because in Day of the Daleks, like, when Yates is on guard... No, it's Benton on guard, and then, like, at Dudley House when her and the Doctor are staying overnight. So she brings out some cheese and wine to Benton, but then Yates comes along and he's like, Benton, you're not meant to... It's one of them. You're not meant to be here. Go to your post. And they do, and then Yates or Benton, whichever one it was who came, was just like, oh, food, thank you, Joe. And it's like,
So we're going to call this episode of the podcast Joe's Food-Related Trauma Number 74.
Yeah. Correct.
I love it. I mean,
Battle of Front-Flipping Reptiles.
I'm not going to say that. Yeah, I'm going to say that.
I'm saying that three times last. The Front-Flipping Reptiles meet the Fluffy Flux.
Yes. God, I'm going to say I can't even say it.
Nope.
Front-Flipping Reptiles three times.
Front-Flipping Reptiles, Front-Flipping Reptiles, Front-Flipping Reptiles.
There you go. I couldn't say it once, you did it three times. Very, very good.
Thank you.
So
this is your exclusive content you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I get everyone who's thinking this is creme de la creme of
this is
Doctor
peak.
Who podcasting. Yeah, we're not going to peak this out. We're not. Yeah, this is the real.
I'll find a way.
I'm sure you will. So the other thing I really like going into the end of the episode is the fact that you have a real naval ship they film on as well. Again, that sense of epic grandeur that comes to the story.
Ah, yes.
As a Doctor takes the caps on, goes onto the seabed.
Again, the Sea Devil just pops at the window. Actually, I think that's where I originally made the Wi-Fi joke when we were watching the story.
Yes, he did.
I've made that prematurely in this podcast. What have I done?
You did. What have you done? Yes, the Doctor is in the capsule and the Sea Devil appears at the outside of the capsule on the seabed. I appears through. Excuse me, can I have the Wi-Fi, please? What do you think of the cliffhanger, though?
Okay, I do have two issues with the Part 4 cliffhanger. One's really minor and the other's a bit bigger. Like, the actual cliffhanger, the Doctor not being in there, okay. But it's like, Joe goes in, looks up, and that's where it ends. And then, like, at the beginning of Part 5, she comes out and goes, he's gone. But it's like, the actual cliffhanger, you could interpret that he could be there, she could have seen something in there, he could be against a wall, there could be a Sea Devil in there, you don't quite know.
Well, exactly. I think the cliffhanger that he's gone is good enough, because he went down a capsule. Where is he? Is he dead?
But they save that line to Episode 5.
Yeah, it makes it look like there's something in the capsule about to attack Joe, which doesn't really make any sense.
And then my minor gripe, and I know they couldn't really help this, but because they're on the real naval ship and they're by the water, when the capsule comes out, some water droplets splash on the camera, which shouldn't bother me, but it's like the very last bits of the episode, there's a significant water blot which just sort of blurs it slightly, and it just brings me out ever so much, because it's like, oh yeah, look, this is a camera, we're filming it, we've got something on the camera. And it shouldn't bother me, but it just does. Like, it has the significant water blot.
Okay. That's the issues of production. Doctor Who isn't real, Ben.
Well, it's not even the biggest issue of production here, but to me it is. Should have wiped it off.
Okay. All right. Maybe they should have, yes. Clean your cameras.
Yeah, they can't help it.
Yeah. Part 5, then. So, what do you think of the Sea Devil lair?
Oh, I really like it. And I like how these last two parts are the biggest bits with the Sea Devils. Like, the lair does look really nice. Reminiscent of the Silurian lair, actually.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I like how thematically Episodes 5 and 6 really become a kind of replay of what's going on with the Silurians, with the Doctor trying to avert a war between the Sea Devils in this sense, rather than Silurians and humans. And
but rather than it being UNIT and Silurians, it's Sea Devils and Navy.
Yeah, which I think it works really, really well. And I like the moral debate on this one. Of course, the difference in this one is the Master's there manipulating events and trying to get in the way.
Hmm. The Doctor might have actually succeeded a bit more until Walker tries and blows him all up if the Master wasn't there. But the Master's just like, nope.
Yes.
Start a war.
Yeah, let's talk about Walker then. He is...
Ah, yes.
Oh. Walker is a piece of work. He's the very old school... He's the sort of person that would have voted for Brexit. And
oh, yeah.
And we'd be on the Tory front benches now. He is just a horrible excuse for a human being that... the way he treats Blythe... Yeah, that real horrible sexism to her. But I think Martin... Bodie, who plays Walker, he does it so well because you just want to punch him. He is just this horrible piece of work who, always far as he's concerned, he lives for war. He lives for the glory days of the World War. You can absolutely see that he was
a World War II soldier.
Yeah, the Blitz mentality you get with the Tories now. He's that kind of character. And as far as he's
concerned... The Sea Devils and the Nazis to him.
Well, absolutely. You know, there is no... sense of reason with him. He's like, let's... And we're episode 6, you get the order of the nuclear escalation as well.
It's like...
Yeah, he's a bully and he lives off the lie. He lives off the glory of war. So I think, you know, when he comes in, he's a wild card then, suddenly, because the Doctor's trying to negotiate peace between the Sea Devils and humans, essentially. The Master manipulates it, and then Walker... Where's the Master? Is the villain on one side trying to stir the pot? You've got Walker on the other side, who is just going to just... shoot now and ask questions later.
It does make me think, if the Brigadier was here, would he fall back on his Silurian's mentality and blow them all up? Or would he have grown since then and gone, actually, Doctor, I will listen to you this time?
Yeah. And then at the end, he's more interested in his lunch and the Queen's interest than
ah, yes.
Than actually, you know, what's really going on. Yeah, he's just... I hate Walker with every fiber of my being, as you can probably tell. The other big thing in episode 5, of course, is the submarine rescue. So the Doctor managed to escape, and you've got him working with Ridgeway to escape. What did you think of the whole escape sequence?
Not as action-packed as I think it may be made out to be, but it is a very fun one.
Yeah.
Like, just three Navy officers get their own on a Sea Devil. Well done. It's like, this isn't how we play cards. This is how we're trying to escape, you idiot. Yeah. Play along.
Definitely. And then, of course, that really builds to the real sense of escalation that happens at the end of episode 6 when all the Sea Devils start coming out the sea and that big send-off cliffhanger as they attack the naval base as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, all them coming out. But I do like also how the cliffhanger isn't them all coming out and just repeating episode 3. Mm. It's like, we're walking along. Suddenly, Sea Devil gets his gun out. Hello.
Yeah, exactly. They're already on the base. It's great.
I know. It's like, but it's like so swift as well. He gets it out. It's just like, up.
Yeah. So let's go on to the final part 6 then. Yes. So this is when it's an all-out massacre, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Right. I feel so sorry for the Sea Devils. Like, genuinely. They keep being shot and doing front flips as they die and throwing themselves to the ground. And
the Doctor has a really good... He punched out several Sea Devils in that opening sequence.
I know. It's like, karate the lizards. I thought you wanted to start a war.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, the Sea Devils don't come off too well, actually, in this story.
No, he just picks the Sea Devil up and just throws it into a wall.
Yeah. But there's a lot going on in the finale, and I think it's a really, really good, solid, satisfying climax to the Sea Devil story.
Mm.
Like, you've got the Master planning to react to all the bases, so, again, that sense of scale is going on. You see the shots of the real naval fleet, and which I think is fantastic again. The story doesn't look cheap because of the amount of work that goes into it. Yeah, I think the Sea Devils designs that close up, yes, they're rubbery, but they look good.
Mm.
You've got the whole naval base set. You've got the underwater.
I mean,
base.
I assume the budget for the story was spent on the Sea Devil base and primarily the submarine, considering the Navy. I wonder if they paid the Navy to use the ships.
Well,
I'm
sure they must have done, but I mean, the budget on this must have been astronomical, surely, because
maybe it explains why Day of the Daleks looks somewhat and also like Time Monster and Kronos flopping everywhere and the mutants.
Well, I think this is the big budget story. This is
arguably Curse of Peladon is also quite big budget for the time.
Yeah,
I think true. Peladon and Sea Devils is where the budget for season 9 went.
But this is big bombastic Doctor Who, and you've got all the naval fleets attacking, and you've got the fights going on the base as well. And it's really great. You mentioned earlier Joe and Hart working together, and of course Walker there is revealed as a coward as well. Mm.
After he orders a nuclear strike, like, Walker's mentality is, massacre and a nice brew, welcome to Britain.
Yes, absolutely, yes. And I love as well the bit when the Doctor is working with the Master on that very, I'm going to say this is the word, we'll talk about budget, but the very cheap-looking device that the Master's building to control the Sea Devils. And Doctor, I made a mistake, as he disorientates the Sea Devils.
Yeah, the Master does it. The Master's way too trusting of the Doctor going, yeah, okay, I'll help you, you know, I'll just build this device.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a great delivery from John Pertwee when he goes, oh, sorry, I did the wrong switch. And I think that's really great. And then, of course, the big beach battle as well, with the sea boat comes in and the soldiers attack. Mm. And what's really good is that there isn't the music there as well. It's surprising, but I'm so glad at the same time there wasn't music here, because it's a real big, epic, action-packed sequence. Mm.
All the Sea Devils, they just... I keep saying it, but they're just hurt so badly in this story.
Yeah, and Captain Hart with that big gun.
Yeah, and it's just like through the smoke, you either see bodies or them like throwing themselves forward onto the floor and just dying.
Nah.
But also like looking up, get the gun out, pew pew.
Yeah, it's a really great sequence. And then you get that really James Bond moment where you've got the Master and the Doctor on the boat chase as well. I love that.
It's Planet of the Spiders episode 2 before Planet of the Spiders episode 2.
Absolutely, yeah. So, you know, again, although, real sense of escalation here.
When that officer comes in and the Doctor's like, right, guard the Master, he literally does not think to tell this guard, by the way, this man might try to hypnotise you.
Yeah. Are you hypno-proof? No.
No, of course you're not a unit soldier, good man.
Yes, good grief. Of course the Master escapes. And then I think, there's a real kind of high-stakes climax, and there's also the grandeur of the naval fleet there in position as well. And the Doctor does that iconic line when he reverses the polarity of the neutral flow.
Yeah, I think that's where the neutral flow bit comes from. Just even on your notes, you have the soggy, smug Master.
You mentioned this, I'm not sure where this came from.
I think after the boat, he like got quite wet in his hair.
He does, yeah. You mentioned
he's
to me, soggy. Oh yeah, as we're watching it, oh, he's a very soggy...
He's a soggy master.
He's a soggy master, absolutely. I don't know what that note was. You make some notes down, I've no idea. Fair enough.
I think,
you know, it's great. And I think because there's the iron this time, the thing about the Silurians was that the Doctor raged against destroying the Silurian base, whereas in this instance, he's the one that destroys it. I think that's a really kind of interesting
and
twist.
And also, the Master's just betrayed by the Sea Devils.
Yeah.
Thank you for all your hard work. Yeah. Now die.
Yeah. Did you think when the Doctor and Master escaped with those suits, they looked like... You mentioned baby grows. I was thinking Zygon baby grows.
Yep, that works. Or like the orange version of that baby in Delta and the Bannermen.
Oh, God, yes. Yes, quite possible.
It's like Zygon baby grow with Roger Delgado's face.
Yes. We're talking about Roger Delgado's face. He's got the twist. Oh, no, he's escaped with the great Mission Impossible-style mask pull off and the Master's gone.
I wonder how long he was planning that heart attack, or if he was just on the boat and he was like, you know what, why not? This might help me escape.
Yeah.
And then, it's interesting how the Doctor says, like, I did what I had to start a war. No, to stop a war, not start a war. Oh, God.
It's John the Pertwee. Doctor, not the Master.
Oh, God, yeah. When the Doctor says, I did what I had to stop a war, and it's like... He pretty much does the exact same thing in Warriors of the Deep, massacres them all, but this time, instead of saying, I did what I had to start, like, their World War III plan, stop World War III plans, oh no, he says, there should have been another way. But it's like, pretty much the exact same thing. I wish the Sea Devils in Legend of the Sea Devils best of luck, because the two times they've met the Doctor on TV, it's been a two for two, he's just massacred them all.
Okay.
Come on. I really hope Jodie Whittaker doesn't try to massacre them, especially as, like, going against pirates, what can... To be fair, pirates have swords, but still, they aren't going to be shot down.
Yeah.
Poor Sea Devils.
Maybe a little bit less of a massacre this time around. We shall see.
Who knows? Considering Arachnid's in the UK, she'll probably find the less humane option.
Quite possibly. So, any final thoughts on the Sea Devils?
I mean, it's just a really good story.
I agree.
It has a great design, and like you can see why the Sea Devils became an iconic monster. Yeah. It's like the Zygons, how like Because the Sea Devils only appear in two stories in the classic run, but people, like including me, really wanted them to come back. And the Zygons only appeared in one, and yet people were clamouring for them to return.
Mm. Well, I said, when you've got a really good monster, I think they do deserve a return appearance. I mean, there are still monsters out there. I'm thinking, I still want to see the Draconians from Frontier in Space.
Ooh, yes, or maybe, maybe the Mara. Bring Janet Fielding back.
Yeah, that'd be great, the Mara. We're going to do, in the future, we're going to do a Mara, we'll look at both the Mara stories, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. But I think, the Mara would be great, and that'd be great we get Tegan back as well, definitely.
How about a return to the web planet?
Or we can move on. Any other monsters you'd like to see? We've got Sea Devils coming back finally. Any other monsters? So we've got Draconians.
I mean, Omega's one people always talk about, and sure, yeah. I'd like to see him back. Although, if you bring him back, please bring back the Urgon. I love the giant chicken man. He's brilliant. The Candy Man would be good, but obviously they'd have to do a different design because rights issues. There's also Haemivores. They might be
the
quite
Haemivores,
cool.
Or, from the same season, the Cheetah people. Let's get the Cheetah people back.
Yes. Them versus the Sontarans in a jousting match.
Yeah,
on
horseback, absolutely, yes.
And then, like, if you want a really obscure monster to bring back, why not to do the Caretakers from Paradise Towers? I don't know. That was a whim of the moment idea.
Okay, let's move on. So okay. I think you're right, though. I think Sea Devils is
quarks.
A really... Yes, Quarks, yeah.
Yes, the Quarks.
Yeah, it's the Quarks.
I like Quarks.
Okay. So I think, yeah, really, really fun story. Really big action, bold action-packed story there. And I did actually reach out on the Twitter account today and said, yeah, anyone have any thoughts on the Sea Devils you'd like to share? So Rob Valentine, who was obviously on our podcast, he said, I like the naval equivalent of unit regulars we get in this one. I think absolutely agree. We mentioned that. I think Hart and Blythe and so on there, a really good, strong dynamic. They're really good allies for the Doctor and
Jones. Blythe like Benton, but bullied.
Yeah, poor Blythe. And then Gareth Brownbill said, the sword fight sequence between the Doctor and the Master with John Pertwee taking a sandwich break. Yeah, it's just gold. Gold Pertwee, absolutely. So that comes to the end of our discussion on the Sea Devils. We're going to be back...
Well, part one of our Sea Devil discussion, let's say.
Don't worry, we're not discussing Warriors of the Deep next. We're going to jump forward to Legends of the Sea Devils and we're going to look at their... long awaited return in modern Doctor Who.
Maybe we should do Warriors of the Deep at some point, because otherwise it's just going to feel incomplete.
I think it's going to happen, isn't it?
Oh yes, I'm going to be praising the Murker and you all wonder what's wrong with me, although I did pick Time Lash to defend, so
yes.
Hey, if you want another one to defend, how about Nightmare and Silver? I love that episode.
I like it too. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, people hate it. And Akaten.
I like Akaten.
I like Series 7B. I know loads of people don't, but it's actually good.
Right. As for the future, we've got many, many more stories to talk about.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yes. But I think that comes to the end of our discussions on the Sea Devils. So thanks for joining us for our latest episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to help out our network, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Doctor is all we'll be discussing, so we'll give you a taste of what else you might have missed on the network in a moment. Next time on the TARDIS crew, we'll be talking more Sea Devils with a review of Jodie Whittaker's latest adventure, Legends of the Sea Devils.
A penultimate adventure.
Absolutely. So join us again for the TARDIS crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.
Elsewhere, and We Made This. We dig music.
I got given a set of mindfulness cards as a Christmas present.
Okay.
And it's a load of fucking bollocks, it really is.
Is it like, with them being cards, I've got them, like, this image of them being like Brian Eno's Oblique Strategies, but with, like, go and read a book or something like that.
Yeah, pretty much. there are these cards, you read them one a day and you're meant to do the tasks. And the task on one day was...
Listen to Bruce Springsteen.
Go and listen to a piece of music that you haven't heard before and listen to it without any prejudice, regardless of genre. And I'm like, have you met me? That isn't possible.
I do that every day anyway.
So I went and listened to something I hadn't heard before and didn't know what genre it was going to be because it was from a set of polls on Twitter. And I listened to this song. It was about someone, an obsessive thought and worrying they were going to start cutting themselves. And I'm thinking, well, this isn't very mindful.
Chucky Vision, a Chucky podcast.
I'm vaguely familiar with Point Horror.
Did you ever read any?
Maybe as a kid, but I don't know them as well as I do Goosebumps.
Right, okay. But how do you feel the kind of adaptation from the books to the series worked? Were they direct adaptations of the books, or were they more inspired by continuation of?
They were pretty direct, actually. There's like 60 books or so, or at least in the original run. He always did those like Goosebumps 2000 and stuff. Like, he was always updating the titles, which, I mean, God knows what kids are reading these days. I don't know if they're reading the original books.
Gotham U, a Batman podcast.
Hear what you're saying, and I can't help but think, like, is it just nostalgia that's giving Michael Keaton the pass on this? But also, it's not his fault. Warner Brothers came and gave him a check and was like, hey, be Batman. What's he going to do? Say no?
No, not at all. And Michael Keaton himself even loved being Batman. He did an interview not too long ago. I don't remember what the interview was, but he was talking about coming back. And he described why he didn't do Batman forever. And, you know, for years there have been speculations, there have been rumors, and he put it to rest. And what everyone said was true. He just didn't like the direction that Warner Brothers was going with the Bat franchise.
There you go.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.